Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of It's Easy Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. I hope that 2022 has been off to a great start. And if it's not, today's guest is going to be an inspiration for us all. No pressure on him, but with me today, I have a young man who was referred to me by a good friend that suggested that this young man I should have a conversation with because of his story, his journey. And quite frankly, after researching and looking him up and speaking with him once or twice, this will be a good episode today. Once again, our focus is on our young people and sharing what can happen for young people, young adults, young professionals, and how you can make it in this world by looking at the stations in life you're at. So with me today is Mr. Roan Edwards, and he is a fellow Jamaican. But more importantly, he's a partner with Ernst & Young, and his journey today is one that we'll go through, and a very fascinating story, if you will, but all of that will come out in the course of this interview. So with that, we're going to go straight in. With no further ado, I welcome to the podcast this week, Mr. Roan Edwards. Roan, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Gerald. Thanks for taking the opportunity to speak with me today. It's really a privilege, it's an honor to share with you and your audience. What you're doing, sir, is something that is very, very important, especially to young men in society today, right? Many young men, I would say, are forgotten by our society. And for you to have an avenue where you're sharing stories so that it can motivate, other fellows and young men out there is something that I think is absolutely commendable. So congratulations to you on this great program, and happy to be here with you today.
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir. This is indeed something that those of us who have been blessed and been very fortunate to be in certain spaces, it only seems right to give back in this way. So we're very grateful that you're here with us. So let us jump right in. As I've shared with all my guests, I don't have preset questions. We start with an open-ended question, and from there, derivative questions will come. So we'll just jump right in. So tell us, who is Roan Edwards, his early years, his background, his growing up, his family? Give us a sense of who you are and what grounded you to where you are today.
Yeah, no, good question, Jerry. And first I'll say I'm a husband and I'm a father. I'm married to a beautiful young woman by the name of Shauna Edwards. She's the anchor of my life. And I'm the father to a 9-year-old girl called Ariana Edwards, who actually runs my life. So one is the anchor and one is the one that, runs my life. She tells me when to come, when to go, how long I can stay, and so on and so forth. So, that's the dynamic in the household here. But, putting fun and joke aside, there are several things that happened along the way that shaped me and allowed me to be the guy I am today. I mean, I'm currently a CPA or an accountant with one of the world's largest accounting firm. But at one point in time, that was not my goal. At one point in time, I thought I was going to be one of the best drummers the world has ever seen. because in my early days, I actually played in a band. I played in church significantly. I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go along. And, as I said, I played for a band for a number of years throughout my high school years. And, we were doing really well. It was with my sister and my brother and others. And, we did so good, and we were, doing a lot of concerts. And I remember one time we were so good that, Kirk Franklin was visiting Jamaica. And, we got the opportunity to open for him at the concert in Jamaica. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But, also I had a goal of playing in the NBA at one point in time. I thought that was going to be something that I would do, the way out of poverty, but that ended up not being the case. And then, of course, as I said, we'll discuss probably a little bit more about that. But, let me tell you a little bit about the early years, right? So I was blessed to be born in Kingston, Jamaica, to a wonderful family. you know, hardworking, diligent people. My dad is Bishop Rowan Edwards in Jamaica, and my mom is Pastor Janet Edwards of the Lighthouse Assembly Ministry in Jamaica. So as you can tell, the true Pastor Pitney, as we would say in Jamaica. But, you know, I'm the oldest of three children. My brother, Jermaine Edwards, he's a professional gospel singer back home in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. He took it to a different level, the music side of the family. He took it to a completely different level. That was an arena that I couldn't star in. So I said, you know what, let me back out. And then my sister is Peter Gay Edwards. She's a nurse back home in Jamaica. So I'm the only one here from my immediate family. When I say here, I mean, I currently live in Atlanta, Georgia. And I've been in the United States of America for about, I'd say 14 years, 15 years, maybe, yeah, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let me tell you a little bit about how it all began. So my mom and dad, you know, attended the same church in Kingston, Jamaica. And my mom was on the choir and my dad was, he had just moved from another parish in Jamaica and was visiting the church that my mom was attending. So of course, my dad borrowed a polka dot suit, we call it back in Jamaica, and he thought he was rocking. And he walked into the church and my mom, you know, he got my mom's attention, but the attention wasn't that of, you know, immediate love and adoration. It was more of ridicule because he was wearing a suit that was at that time, I guess, not something that was so great, a polka dot suit. But anyways, you know, my dad saw what was going on the choir because she sat on the choir, and he said to himself, you know what, that lady up there, I'm gonna get her. He saw what he wanted and he went after it, put it that way. So long story short, they began dating and got married, right? And you know, in the early days, it was you know, a significant amount of challenges, you know, growing up in a place called Grants Pen Road in Kingston. You know, so you know, we came from nothing. My mom and dad came from absolutely nothing. They grew up very poor, no inheritance. My dad was the outcast, I would say, of his family. No one thought he was gonna make it at all. We lived in a community in Jamaica that I mentioned, called Grants Pen Road. It was riddled with crime. There were nights when we went to bed hardly having anything to eat. I remember a story, and this is probably my earliest memory, back in the days of Grants Pen Road. I mean, we and I said we had nothing. We grew bananas outside in the yard, and my mom picked those bananas, and we didn't have anything to, we call it protein or salting, right? We didn't have any salting, so didn't have any proteins to eat with those bananas. So my mom said, you know what, we're gonna get some oil. And we had banana and oil. And I will never forget, there was a visitor too that was coming that Sunday evening. And my mom was like, let's put it away so that the visitor don't see what we're having for dinner. And my dad said, no, we're not gonna do it. We're going to show it and we're gonna offer them. So that was an early lesson learned, you know, being accepted for who you are, not hiding. So that was very important, early development, as I said, a development point for me. And then, you know, another thing too that I learned was, you know, don't let your current situation determine your future, right? The attitude, and this is a saying that I've adopted along the way, your attitude during your situation would determine your altitude, right? And, you know, they show that, you know, what I saw was that they were happy and always optimistic, had an optimistic view of life, I should say. You know, always lived a life of service. And, you know, the premise that no matter what your situation is, there's always somebody who is not as doing as good as you. They're worse off, right? So giving back is important. They never complained about anything. And they use the situation to impact the world, you know. So being a true servant, they were pouring into people's life. And as a result, people poured into their lives, right? And, you know, continuing on, you know, that as a result of my father joining that church, you know, they becoming married, working hard, my dad got offered a role to open up a branch of the church in Spanish Town, Jamaica. Mm. And this was a big break for us, right? Very, very big break. You know, we got the opportunity to get out of a rough community. We also was able to have a house that was on loan to us. There was a missionary from Detroit who owned a house in Spanish Town. And she said, boy, I love the work that you guys are doing. So I'm going to pour into your life and I'm going to loan you a house that you can live in.
Wow. Wow.
While you guys are there in Spanish Town. Yeah, and he worked hard and, you know, my dad, that is, and ultimately grew the church and opened up other churches in Spanish Town and other parts of Jamaica, and ultimately became the bishop of the entire ministries in Jamaica, and continued to become, you know, one of the leading voices in gospel in Jamaica. So, you know, the drive, the determination, the motivation, the passion that I have really came from my parents. And I'm forever grateful for them and my family for what they have, you know, instilled in me. Now, I'm not saying that they were perfect.
Right.
But they did the best they could with what they knew at the time is what I'd say. Right. And, you know, there were many disagreements with my dad. At times I felt like, you know, I had a pastor, not a dad. We can talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these things shape me, as I said. And today, you know, in hindsight, you know, he fulfilled his purpose on this earth, because there's so many lives that he and my mom touched. And I can literally see the changes. I mean, I remember growing up with so many young men and women back home in Jamaica, and there are so many lives. And even today, they're still touching lives and changing lives. So very proud of what they've achieved. You know, and continuing the story a little bit more from an education perspective, right? Because that's also important. My parents saw the need and the importance of education as the ticket out of poverty. You know, I mentioned we moved to Spanish Town to open up that church. And I remember, well, I don't remember this, to be honest with you. I'll tell you the pieces that I remember. But I remember my dad always said that when we moved to Spanish Town, there wasn't any opportunity for school.
Wow.
So there was this school called Spanish Town Primary that I attended, but I was not enrolled in the school, which is just so... interesting.
Right. And
so there was a teacher by the name of Miss Gordon that said to my dad, you know what, I like what you're doing. There's no space for your son to get enrolled, but I am going to take him in my class. So I actually started attending primary school, or elementary school, we'll call it here in America, in Spanish Town. Not enrolled at all. And I think that happened for like 2 years or a year and a half, maybe. But at the time when I was going to school, I thought I was just being a bad boy, because she would put me right beside her. So there was no class, there was no seats in the class. So what she did was she put a seat beside her table at the front of the class, and I will always sit there. Wow. At the time, I thought I was just that guy who was always misbehaving. Even when I'm going early sometime, and I said, I'm not going to sit by the teacher this time. I'm actually going to sit in the classroom. So I'm going to get there early and sit to the back. And she would take me up from the back and put me up to the front. And I used to say, my goodness, why is this lady so hard on me? Mm-hmm. But didn't know at the time that I was not actually enrolled at the school. And I think the truth is, being at the front of the class, it allowed me to learn so much. So that was a benefit that my parents actually bestowed to me. So that was actually very critical to the success today. And, you know, so I finished primary school and, you know, went on to high school, the Great San Diego High. And, you know, we have a high school rivalry in Jamaica.
Yeah. Won the Manning Cup yesterday.
Yes.
I just had to say that. But San Diego is an excellent school.
Yes. I love that school. And I'll continue to try my best to get back to that school. But yeah, went on to high school, San Diego High School. Wasn't a model student, I will say, you know. But in my mind, I would say, as a pastor's kid, you know, you're held to higher standards. So therefore, because you're held to higher standards. Folks seems to think that you're the worst if you're not above the grade, I would say. But I would say that I may have been average at the time, but I wouldn't say that I was below the grade. But, you know, got into trouble a couple of times, hanging out with the wrong crowd, you know, which was, of course, a deterrent at the time. Almost got kicked out of high school, believe it or not.
Wow.
And it was my dad who, you know, a pastor in a community at the time said, you know, came to the school and begged and said, hey, could you please keep him enrolled? And again, that was very critical, again, to the path that I'm on today. You know, but I was always good in math and accounting, and, you know, with some additional subjects, I barely made it to sixth form. And, you know, during high school, I had my mind set on leaving Jamaica, because I saw it as a way out of poverty. And honestly, at the time, you know, I just wanted to move away because I didn't see me being the heir of my dad's ministry, right? Being the firstborn. You know, there's some pressure there too as to, oh, he's going to be the next pastor of the church. And I didn't see my way. I didn't see it that way. I didn't think that was going to be me. And, you know, so I wanted to just get out of Dodge, put it that way, right? And I saw that as going to the U.S. So tried a few different ways, sat for the SATs. You know, SAT didn't score high enough to get a scholarship. My parents couldn't afford it to send me to school overseas. Tried to do track and field, you know, of course, boys jumps. Good old boys jumps days. So funny story. So the sport I did in boys jumps was triple jump. So I was good enough. I qualified to make it to boys jumps. And, you know, I remember doing the triple jump and, you know how you do three steps and you're in the sun. But when I debuted at the boys champs, I never made it to the sun. So I never advanced at all. So
I've seen that many times.
So clearly that was the end of that. And, you know, did soccer as well. Didn't do so well in soccer in high school. Did basketball, that paid off. You know, but, you know, so continued on to college. Actually, before...
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Before you go to college and high school, Spanish Town, Grandspan, I used to live in Aylsham, which is off Shortwood Road. And we used to have to drive through Grandspan. So that's I really understand what you're saying about the community, but always good people is one of the things that I always noticed.
Agreed.
I used to take the bus home. But as you think about those communities... Grandspan, Spanish Town, and you're growing up in Jamaica, the influence of your dad, your mom, your siblings, and everything else. If you look back today and see what's happening in those communities still, what thoughts come to your mind?
I think it's opportunities. You know, I would say those communities are very important, I would say, to the development of me personally, right? Because if I didn't come up in those communities, I probably wouldn't understand the whole concept of fighting hard and achieving, right? And being motivated. So it plays a part. But I would say, you know, as it relates to the opportunities there in Jamaica in those communities, I think there's way more that can be done to help communities like those. I would say it's not the same as it was. I know things have gotten much better in Jamaica, but when I was going through, it was a tough community. But now it's a little bit, it's gotten better, but there's more work to be done is what I'd say.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Good. I just wanted to get your perspective because, you know, a lot of the people that we hear from time to time, and almost all of my guests have started out at a station in life where they thought they weren't going to make it. And then they eventually, just like you're sharing with us today, they got an opportunity. The grit, the determination, and the perseverance, it comes through, which actually helps to shape and mold them. It's almost like the diamond in the rough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that at the end of the day, polishing up that diamond. But that high school experience with boys champs and everything, I have my own boys champ story, but we'll leave that for another time. Yeah. So you got through the high school, Spanish Town Primary, St. Diego High, and then on to college. What was that like?
Yeah, so, I'd say before I even got into college, right? So, you know, you understand the whole concept of A-levels and stuff like that. You know, we call it the college entrance test, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time, you know, I didn't do well in A-levels, right? So I had it that I wanted to go to the University of the West Indies. I'm more affectionately known as UWI. UWI is like the Ivy League College of Jamaica, right? So everybody wanted to get in because that's where you go and, you know, you're going to be successful if you attend that school. And I didn't get the subjects, and my parents and I wanted for me to get into UWI. So as a result, you know, we said, all right, I'm going to sit out a year. I'm going to work and I'm going to retake those A-level exams. And honestly, I retook the A-level exams and I still didn't get enough subjects to get into UWI. And I thought that was the end for me. I mean, because I said, well, I'm not smart enough to get anywhere. I tried the exams twice and didn't make it. I tried the SATs, wasn't smart enough to get a scholarship, wasn't good enough to get a scholarship for sports. So then, with consultation with some family friends, we said, you know what, let's just go to the University of Technology. So I ended up going to the University of Technology. Actually played basketball for 3 years of the 4 years at University of Technology. Freshman and sophomore years, my grades wasn't so good. I was more focused on basketball at the time than I was academics. Mm-hmm. And my mind was still focused on going overseas because, again, I wanted to get out of Dodge, right? And, long story short, you know, my first year of college, you know, put together a video because, you know, a collage of different takes throughout the first year of college, and sent the video up to a Division II college in New York. And, I went up to New York that summer, and while staying in New York that summer, I got invited to come to trials as a result of sending that video up to that Division II college.
Wow.
And, went and did trials, and the coach looked at me and said, Ron, you're not good enough for me to give you a scholarship, right? But I know if you're a walk-on, I'll take you. So again, the financial side of it was a hurdle, again, because I couldn't afford, you know, I couldn't afford to go to college if it wasn't a scholarship. College overseas, that is, if it wasn't a scholarship.
Right.
No, that was a critical moment, but it didn't seal the deal as to, you know, that was it for the NBA and the focus on academics. It wasn't at that point in time that I realized that academics is the way to go, or was a critical component and not the NBA at the time. What really sealed the deal was the summer of 2001. So I was working as a messenger in New York City, and that's when 9/11 happened, right? So. You know, as a messenger in New York City, you know, I knew New York like the back of my hands. And to be honest with you, on 9/11, I was supposed to deliver a package in the World Trade Center on that day.
Wow.
And but what had happened that day is it happened on the Tuesday, and I was supposed to head back to Jamaica the Thursday. And I called my dispatcher and I said, listen, I'm leaving on Thursday, and I just want to stop in and do some shopping to, you know, prepare to go back home. And, as a result, I wasn't working that morning pretty much, right? So long story short, on my way down to Manhattan to do some shopping, and 9/11 happened. So I was supposed to leave that Thursday. Didn't leave that Thursday. I think I left like 2 weeks later as a result of the chaos that was going on in New York. And what happened now is that I didn't make the basketball team that year. So I sat out the entire year because I came back late. And then I realized that, my goodness, clearly basketball is not going to be it.
Right.
So at that point in time, I said, man, I need to pull my socks up and I need to focus on academics. So the following 2 years of college, you know, got my GPA up, graduated, and then, didn't even make it into Ernst & Young at the time, actually, And we can talk a little bit more about that component of Ernst & Young, how I got there and everything. But I'll pause there now to just see if there's anything else you want to ask.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So what college, what Division II school was it?
It was the New York Institute of Technology.
Okay. So you know, you're the son of a pastor. And, you know, one of the things I said to people all the time, and people ask me the same questions, I don't have an answer for some of the questions they ask me. Mm-hmm. And how I ended up in the positions that I ended up to be where I was at what point in time. But like the 9/11 story you just shared, you know, would you consider that part of the journey for Rowan Edwards and divine providence, if you will?
Absolutely do. I do, because again, even though I hit the roadblock the year before with not getting that scholarship and transitioning to that university in New York, I still was hell bent. But that was, I think, an intervention that I needed. Mm. Because again, I was supposed to be in that building on the day, right? Because I deliver packages in and out of that building on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So I was supposed to be in that building on that day, that morning. Didn't end up going in the building because I said I wanted to get prepared for my travel back on Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. And then as a result of that, did not get the opportunity to play on the college team, the basketball team that year, because I came back too late. So to me, that wasn't my choice, or chance, I should say. I think that was something that I needed to help me understand that, you know, basketball wasn't going to be it.
Well, it's interesting because there's a young Casey, former track runner, Neil Hines. He was actually in the building and he passed away as a result of it.
Oh my goodness.
You know, that was a very, very tragic day in the history of the United States, but or the world for that matter.
Yeah.
But as you think about the next step, so as we, Ernst & Young, you are now at this very prestigious firm.
Yes.
What happened after college, and what has brought you to where you are today and the work that you do today?
Beautiful. Yeah. So after leaving college, Ernst & Young is, we have an office in Jamaica as well. I was not, when we had our career fair in Jamaica at UTEC, University of Technology, and, you know, PwC, KPMG, Deloitte, and all the big four, they came, actually probably big eight at the time, came in, well, I don't think, well, probably big six in Jamaica, maybe. But they came to the campus and I didn't get an interview. You know, I said, wow, I want to be an accountant. All my friends, you know, there are three of us or four of us that hung out and they all went to the big four. And I'm like, I'm the only one who didn't go to the big four. And I said, wow, is that an indication that accounting is just not going to be the thing? But, you know, never got deterred and started out working for a year at another company. But it just so happened, and we can talk a little bit more about mentors, sponsors, right? And
Absolutely.
Those are critical components to me getting to where I'm at today too as well. But you know, I developed a really good relationship with a gentleman by the name of Garth Kidu. Right. He used to be the president of the ICAJ and it was the dean of our business school when I was going there. And, you know, God rest his soul, he passed on a couple years ago. But, you know, we developed a really good relationship. And I remember one day I was sitting down at the other company that I started working with. And I, you know, I decided to communicate with him. And he said, Rowan, come in and let's have a conversation. And, you know, so said, so done. Went into his office just after I graduated. Went into his office and he sat me down and said, Rowan, what do you want to do? And I said, man, to be honest with you, I would love to be in a big four firm because, you know, if you want to be a successful accountant, you know, one of the great starts is in a big four firm. And he said, all right, I know a contact over by Ernst & Young. Here's what I'm going to do for you. Send me a resume and I'm going to forward it on to him. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you can sit with him and do an interview. Long story short, got an interview with him and I went in and did the interview with the gentleman, Linville Freeman. He was a partner in the firm in the Jamaica office at the time. and landed the position and started
in Jamaica or
in Jamaica. Landed the position at Ernst & Young, but that was really as a result of that relationship with Garth Kidu. And started with the Jamaica office, was there for about a year and a half. And then, I had a couple of folks who had moved on to locations in the US and they were traveling to and from. I think we had one, this was back in 2007. So we had just one Fannie Mae, the company. And, they were requesting people from all over the country to come and work. So there were two individuals in our office in Jamaica who went up to DC to work on Fannie Mae. So because I know that they were there, I reached out to them and said, listen, because as you know, I really wanted to move to the US. I reached out to them and said, hey, I'm really interested in making a move over to the US. You know, any opportunities, you know, that are there or anybody I could speak to? And they said, yeah, I know a recruiter who may be interested in individuals. And I reached out to that person. And long story short, I was able to get an interview with a partner in the Rhode Island office. And, they were hiring at the time because we had just landed a huge company that's domiciled in Rhode Island at the time. And they were looking for people. And that's how I got to get transferred from Jamaica to Rhode Island to work in the Providence office of EY. Yeah. I'll tell you, if I was overjoyed, I was really grateful and thankful and still is, because again, Garth Kidu was the one who started that opportunity, got the opportunity now to come overseas. Now, while here in the States working at Ernst & Young, I'll tell you, it's a great company, but there are things that weren't right. You know, there are things that happen along the way that, it's not no fault of Ernst & Young of themselves, but there are people within the company who may have, made you feel comfortable, or clients we worked with. I remember one incident, working at a client when I was in the New England area, and I was in the room with a staff member. And the controller walked into the room. I was the highest ranking person in the room at the time. I think it was one or two or three of us in the room. And of course, the person, the controller walked into the room, I was the only African American in the room, just clearly looked beyond me and said, I assume that you're the highest ranking person in the room. So completely, completely disregarded me. And I looked at that and I said, my goodness, I wonder why. Why is that the case? And, from that day, there are certain things that I said I would have to change. And, to be honest with you, I talked to many young men today and I said to them, listen, sometimes you walk in a room, it's not necessarily that there's anything wrong with you, but, you pretty much is seen by others because perception is your reality. You're seen by others as having a chip on your shoulder. And as a result, there are certain things that you probably have to do that you're not going to be comfortable with, right? To make a difference. Meaning, if you haven't weared a coat, wear a coat. It's important, because again, perception is your reality. And sometimes you have to make that change. Now, mark you, at the end of the reverse of that is, I shouldn't say the reverse, the other side of that is, the world needs to also understand that, all right, there needs to be a change in the perception of people, not perceiving them by the color of their skins or our skin, but also perceiving, based on what you're seeing from inside, what is being projected by the individual, right. And not necessarily how they look. Right. So that needs to also change or continue to change, I will say. But in the meantime, I encourage young men out there to make sure that, if you want to put on a coat just to make sure you want to make a statement, just go ahead and do so. It's something that is important.
It's not gonna hurt. But you said something interesting, Garth Kidu and all of that. Can you talk to us a little bit about the importance of mentorship and having mentors? This journey is not easy. It's not a straight linear path from where you're gonna start and where you're gonna quote unquote end up, which is always relative in my mind. But can you talk to us a little bit about mentors and the need for mentors?
Yeah, no, definitely can. And you know, for me in my own career, as I said, you know, there are many people who was very, very important to my advancement, right? So I talked about GART, which was very, very important to the initial phase. Then once I moved to Providence, and I also operated in the Boston area, I also met another gentleman by the name of Dale Thompson. And he's a partner with Deloitte, sorry, BDO now, but he was once a partner with EY. And we developed a really good relationship. And as a result of Dale's mentorship, you know, he said, man, there's a accounting conference that happens every year in the US. It's called the National Association of Black Accountants,
right?
And NABA. And, you know, got involved with NABA, you know, under the mentorship of Dale, and said, hey, you need to do this. You know, you need to go to the conference. And when you go to the conference, there are some individuals that I want you to meet. And, you know, there were three gentlemen that he wanted to meet. And I made sure that I went and met those guys. And as a result of meeting those guys, you know, when I was faced with a very tough decision moving from, and I didn't talk about this. So my career started in the US, in New England, but that lasted for 5.5 years, mm-hmm. right? My wife, you know, we had just had our little girl, and my wife spent time with her sister who lived in Tampa at the time. So she came down and she said, man, I enjoyed this. And she came back to me and she said, listen, Rohan, we're either going to move to Atlanta, or sorry, to Tampa, or something else got to give. And I wasn't about to find out what was going to give. So as a result of that, you know, I started the process of trying to transition to Tampa. Now, it just so happened that the individuals that Dale Thompson told me to connect with were individuals who were in the Southeast region. So Atlanta, Tampa, mm-hmm. right? Those were the areas that they lived. And, you know, so when I decided to make that transition, there was a gentleman, or one of the guys that I met, who was from the Tampa office, and he was very instrumental in, you know, making me make connections in the Tampa office. Now, another story about the transition to Tampa too, as well, is when I moved to the New England area, there was a diversity mentorship program. And it is so important that these programs continue to exist today for young men, right? And young women too, everybody. But as a result of that diversity mentorship program, I was aligned to a gentleman who was the office managing partner of the Boston office at the time.
Mm.
And, you know, we went to lunch and stuff like that. And we talked about family. We talked about goals. And, you know, he now transitioned from that role into a national role, and then mm-hmm. transitioned now his job to another guy who came up to be the OMP. So I was also connected to that OMP because, you know, it was the same. I was connected to the role and not the person. So as a result, that new person became my mentor as well. And so when I made a decision that I wanted to move to Florida, that OMP, that office managing partner at the time at Boston, in the Boston office, called the office manager of the Tampa office and said, hey, I have a gentleman here that I know personally, and wow. I would like for wow. you to help him out. And, you know, he's a great guy. You know, of course, there's an important component of making sure that you can use the tools.
Yes.
Right. But of course, relationships help, right? Yeah. Is what I'm saying. So yeah, you got to be a technician. You got to know your stuff, right? Very, very important. But relationships help along the way. And the two came together for me. And that's how I got to the Tampa office, right?
Wow.
And then, so that's how I got to Tampa. So stayed in Tampa for 5 years. While I was in Tampa, it was a very tough time being in the Tampa office and just, you know, dealing with, you know, there's a whole heap of work. I mean, as you can understand, in the accounting arena or the auditing world, there's a ton of work. We work hard, long hours. So I remember I got to a very low point in my life. And I was working with a gentleman who was the coordinating partner on the job that I was working on, and I messed up. I really, and this is a lesson to be learned too. You know, you will make mistakes, but you don't sit and wallow, is what I like to say.
Yeah.
In the mistake that you made. And I remember I had a very tough conversation with a controller at a company, and it wasn't, you know, in hindsight, that was not the best approach to take. And I remember that partner called me into his office and he sat me down and he said, "Rohan, nothing is wrong with the message that you were delivering. What was wrong is the packaging of that message." Mm. And, you know, that gripped me. And you know, I broke down in tears during that conversation. And as a result of that conversation, you know, that partner looked at me and said, "Rohan, I want you to get on my calendar every 6 weeks from here." And he became a mentor. Mm. And, wow. You know, he transitioned roles. You know, he moved from Florida to Atlanta, became a leader in the Atlanta region. Then, you know, he said, "Rohan, I would like you to consider a role in the Atlanta office. Here it is." And so said, so done, considered it and moved to Atlanta. And then was in, and you know, I've been in Atlanta for 3 years. So I was a senior manager all the way up to last year. So, you know, the key thing there is that, you know, because of the history that I had, a little bit of history that I had in Tampa, you know, he had the foresight to say, "Well, I think for you to succeed, you have to move to another office. And I think the role that I have for you here in Atlanta would be a really good role." So said, so done. So as a result of that, move to Atlanta, became, you know, ultimately got promoted to partner last year.
Well, you know, that's a story because I'm an ex-Deloitte. So I know what that dynamics is like. And I just have to say to you, congratulations, because it's not often that people get invited into the partnership. So that is a major accomplishment in and of itself. So you stressed a lot about the mentors. You connected the dots for us. But I'm going to do with you as I do all of the guests. If you had your druthers in terms of influence, impact, gravitas, and let's just say resources, what are one of the two things globally that you are passionate about that you would spend some time trying to change, given all that you have shared just now?
You mean looking back?
Looking back and then going into the future. If you had an audience of young people today, say between the ages of 17, freshman in college to, let's say, 30, a young adult trying to figure out their career, what are some of the things that you could change, you think you would work on to change?
Yeah, you know, here's what I'd say, right? In hindsight, you know, this hindsight is 2020, right?
Right.
Here's what I'd say. I wish I had learned some of these lessons probably earlier in my career, is what I'd say. So one of them is being comfortable, or get comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm. Meaning, you know, if you exhibit the same habits every time, you'll reap the same results, right?
Yeah.
Meaning, so you know, there are times when, you know, I was attacking and trying to go towards a goal, and you know, I was not paying attention to some of the habits that I had, and understanding that some of those habits need to change. Because if you don't change those habits, you know, if you get to a position where you're failing, if you don't change certain things, what's going to happen is you're always going to reap those same results. So getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, and habits is exactly that. Habits is something that you've developed over time. So therefore, if those same habits are allowing you to get to the same level or stay at the same level, then clearly there are things that you're going to have to do that is going to make you uncomfortable, right? Another thing I'd say is, you know, which I think is really, 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 really important, and we touched on it not too long ago, is relationship sponsors, counselors, right? I like to use the term, and it's probably a cliche, right? And it's used a lot out there in the business world, board of directors, right? board of directors, I think, is very, very critical. And I wished I understood this early again in my career. I didn't really invest the time to build my board of directors until later in my career, right? When I got to the manager level. I wish I had done that earlier in my career, right? Or expanded my board of directors, you know, because my dad and others, my father-in-law were individuals who were a part of my upbringing, and they, you know, consult with them from time to time. But a critical component of having a successful career is expanding your board of directors and understanding that these board of directors, they're not going to look like you. All of them can't look like you. If all of them look like you, you're probably going to have a problem there. And let me tell you why, because you need to have diversity of experiences, diversity of thought, because diversity of thought, you know, is the pathway to new solutions, right? So if you don't diversify your thoughts, diversify your experiences, diversify the people who you're consulting with, you will always end up in a position where you're going to get the same results, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, so that's also another important concept for me that I wish I'd learned at an earlier age or earlier, mm-hmm. I would say.
It's a very interesting, I had to write down what you just said. Diversity of thought is the pathway to new solutions. But it seems as if most folks are just in, go through things as a rote exercise. Do you think they need one of those moments like you had, that was an intervention almost to get them to wake up to it? Or is it that mentors can pull that out of them? Because when I'm in the higher education field now, and I'm at an institution where daily I see these bright, bright kids and they're off doing great things. But if I was to really be honest with myself, looking back to your point, we don't have that, you know, Saul and Damascus Road experience, if you will, that causes you to change. Mm-hmm. We don't get those very often, or when they come, we don't recognize that this thing is really here to help us. We end up being bitter rather than getting better. Is that a sense you see as well?
Yeah, no, that's really good. I like that. Those are really good comments just now, Jerry. I mean, if I think about it, to be honest with you, it just depends on the person, right? Mm. There's some individuals where they need that light bulb to be switched on, and that light bulb would not switch on if it's some sort of, you know, high hurdle that they met, or some divine intervention, or something, you know, some major, you know, defeat that they would have experienced that caused that bulb to switch on, right? And there are others who, based on the mentorship and guidance that others may provide, will allow that bulb to switch on. And then it could, and also it could be a combination of the two, right?
Right.
I think it has to do with the person, the experiences the person had up to that point, maybe. You know, because no one path is the right path, right? I think multiple paths can get you to the success, right? Successful is also how you define it as well, right? That's yeah. The other thing again. So you know, I'd say it depends on the individual.
On the individual. Well, we, as I told you, we have about 10 minutes left. Mm-hmm. And I definitely want to get at least my last question in, and we'll open it up. Now, I've done this with, you know, your son, your pastor's child, a preacher's kid, or Pastor Pickney, whatever you want to say. And, you know, I've had Andrew Young on the show and a couple of other people, Otis Moss and people like that. But as you look at our society today, you know, we're in this pandemic, you know, Omicron seems to be peaking, wherever Omicron is, and COVID and all this kind of stuff. But there are people who are challenged in this time, because they see things that the haves keep going up, the have-nots keep going down, the middle seems to be suppressed in terms of economics, you name it. So one can say hopelessness creeps in. Mm-hmm. So if you had the ability, and I'm going to, because you're a preacher's kid, I'm going to say from a pastoral perspective, if you had to provide some words of wisdom, hope, and encouragement, what would they be?
You know, I'd probably start off by saying, you know, my one thing that my mom and dad instilled in me at a very early age is, you know, understanding your purpose, right? I think there has to be, I mean, yes, there's a lot of external factors that is impacting individuals today. And you know, it may not be moving in the direction that we want it to move in. But I do think there's an important component of understanding purpose, right? And for me, you know, I would say the purpose, my purpose, and I came across this somewhere else, the definition of purpose, and I can't recall where I got it from, but the definition of purpose is understanding or using your strengths and talents to serve others, right? And again, that is exactly what I saw in my parents, right? And it's important. It's a component. It's a firm foundation for me today. And you know, what I'd say is, it to me, you know, what it epitomizes, you know, that is understanding what your strengths are, and I've developed those strengths. You know, whether professionally or personally over time. And what I'll say is, and I'll use my example, if I'm serving my clients both internally and externally, and I'm in a position to give back to the system that produced me, I will truly say that I'm fulfilling my purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Because to me, again, purpose is using your strengths and talents to serve others. That's what I believe purpose is. And, you know, if I was giving advice to somebody else during this time is for somebody to really take a step back and think about what is your purpose, right? Figure out what that is. And then potentially it could be that you may be barking up the wrong tree. You know, you may be trying to go up the wrong tree. And so therefore, if you're going up that wrong tree, you probably never make it to the top, right? Yeah, yeah. So you need to first figure out what your purpose is. And then the other thing I'd say too, right? And a lot of us, you know, we tend to associate disappointment with the fact that we're not meeting a goal, right? But if I was to think out the box, I think we should associate disappointment not necessarily with not meeting a goal, but actually not being committed to the process.
Wow.
To
wow.
get to that goal.
That is deep.
Right. Mm-hmm. So to me, in this time, right, as you know, a lot of us, and it's the great resignation, a lot of people are leaving companies and stuff like that, right? And that's probably a story for another day, but mm-hmm. a lot of people are reconsidering and thinking about doing some soul searching, right, to figure out what exactly is going on, and you know, they're feeling deflated. But to be honest, and there's genuine reasons to be, and don't get me wrong, there's genuine reasons to feel deflated, right? But as you're going through this soul searching, right, think about that process. Am I committed to the process? Am I doing the things that, you know, I developed this goal. And I think I have a system to achieve that goal, and I have a process to achieve that goal. But are you actually committed to that process? Are you doing the things that require you to make the different steps to get to the goal? Are you really doing that? Or are you just saying, well, I have a goal to achieve this in a year or two, and I didn't meet that goal, right? That's so right. Step back a little bit, in my opinion, and assess the process.
Yeah.
Am I truly committed to that process? So first, think about purpose. And then second, you know, while you're doing this soul searching, right, don't focus necessarily on the goals before focusing whether I'm committed to the process of achieving those goals.
That's actually pretty profound, because a lot of times we have it backwards. And as soon mm-hmm. as the disappointment comes, we give up. or we might say it's not for me and we move on. Well, believe it or not, we have about 3 minutes left.
Oh gosh.
So I got one last question. And obviously I'm gonna ask you about mom and dad and how are they doing. But and you're newly promoted to partner, obviously in a big, is it four now, big four?
Big four, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big four firm. So what's next for you? Aside from work keeping you busy and a 9-year-old daughter, basketball games and all this stuff, what's next for you? What's the vibration you want to leave in this earth?
So, you know, along the lines of what I just talked about as it relates to purpose, you know, so I recently joined this wonderful organization called the Integrity Children's Fund. It's a not-for-profit organization that focuses on serving, you know, at-risk kids in very challenged communities, both in Jamaica and the U.S. Really good founding members, you know, Carl Chambers, Marcia Chambers, Chris Parker, they call him Sarge. They started the organization, and, you know, I recently became vice president of that organization. So to me, as I think about, you know, what impact I can leave on the world, right? I think this is, and again, this was, you know, coming from my background, upbringing of service, giving back to the system that created you. To me, I feel like it's really, really, really important that I continue to serve in that regard. So, you know, went on the board of the Integrated Children's Fund, and I will continue to serve in that regard, trying to do as much as we possibly can. You know, we have a school here in Atlanta that we help out with reading, and, you know, we call it the Book Buddies program, which is actually doing really good things for that school. And then we have some schools in Jamaica that we help, you know, with you know, financial resources and stuff like that to help to advance education back home in Jamaica. Again, I am a product of the educational system in Jamaica. It wasn't perfect, right? But giving back to that system is important to me, and I think I will continue to do that until I leave this earth. Of course, along with the fact that I have a 9-year-old.
Yes.
And I'm a husband, a wonderful lady by the name of Shauna Wilson Edwards, which to me, first and foremost, that's, you know, a family man is first and foremost. And then I have a job, right, that pays the bill. And also we're doing some great work with our clients as well, which is also important to building up the working world.
Yep. Well, Ron, we're right at time, but I just want to say this to you. First, I'm humbled that you were able to join us and the few conversations we had prior. I know this is going to be another good episode. I can tell by the journey you've shared. And as I've said to the audience many times over, the comments myself and the producers get, it's about the authenticity of the guests. And your story today, sir, is going to help quite a bit of people in that regard. I will say, as a point of preference, is that if just say hello to Sam Johnson for me and share this episode with him. You know, he's a good man at Morehouse College. And
yes.
He's done some amazing things for his alma mater there at Morehouse. I enjoyed Ernst & Young coming in to help me figure out something that was a longstanding issue when I got there, and we got it solved. So kudos to EY for their advice and counsel on that. So, you know, keep it going, sir. Appreciate you for what you're doing, the giving back that you're doing. A shout out to your mom, your dad, your brother, sister. I do listen to your brother's music, by the way.
Oh, you do? I'll definitely let him know, man.
Yeah, let him know. I do listen to his music. I listen to gospel when I work out every morning. And
oh, wow. That's
Jamaican amazing. Gospel oftentimes is what's playing while I work out. So, ladies and gentlemen, we just spent an hour with Rohan Chambers and Roman Edwards. Rohan Chambers introduced me to Rohan Edwards.
Great guy.
So, great guy. We'll marry him at that. So, kudos
to Rohan. Listen,
Barry,
it was really good being on the program today. Thank you for, again, for taking the time to allow me this platform to share my story. And hopefully it is impactful and, you know, it's motivational for many young men and women out there. And, you know, thanks again for what you're doing. You know, best wishes on continued success in your program. And I look forward to the continued, you know, Heights that you read.
Thank you, sir. And when my wife and I are in Atlanta, we need to look you up.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just spent the last hour with Rowan Edwards. You heard his story. As always, the guests that are here, we hope that something was shared, something enlightening came about for you to look at your station in life in a new perspective and think about what's possible. There are some actual steps shared today, some background, some techniques, some tips. I pray that you will gather those things and continue to strive to be the best that you can be. And as always, this is It's Easy, Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. Until next week, take care, be safe.